Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now 118 shopping days until Christmas, and you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies and TV shows all year round. My name is Joseph Wade. I'll be your host for this evening. Here with me tonight, once again, my good buddy, yours and mine, Mr. Bradford. Hello, Brad.
Awoo!
Awoo!
It's the dog days of summer here.
It sure is, folks. This is the main centerpiece for this month of programming on Christmas Creeps. We kind of stumbled out of the gate a little bit, but I think we recovered nicely with Christmas Comes to Packland.
Hey, it's been a long summer. We treated ourselves to a nice rest. There's a lot going on, both
this
in our
true.
Lives and outside of our lives. So
very true.
Riding high, though, now. I love it.
This is like primetime Christmas Creeps material here, and I'm so excited to jump into it tonight.
Really, it leads into, like, our whole rigmarole. This is... I saw my first pumpkin beer in the grocery store today.
Yes.
The dog days of summer are upon us, and soon, we are going to be in the burr months. And I personally cannot wait.
I know, it's just a few short days away, and I'm so excited. I mean, our Spirit Halloween just opened up for the season this week, and, you know, depending on how you feel about kitschy Halloween decorations and stuff, I bought a Mars Attacks welcome mat for our front door, so that's exciting.
I think I know how you feel about kitschy Halloween decorations.
The more, the merrier. That's all I could say.
I think I have two strands of purple LED lights and a strand of orange LED lights that I kind of haphazardly throw in the windows, if I remember
You know what? At least it's an attempt.
An attempt was made. A lot of people don't decorate for Halloween.
I know, and they're so strange to me. Like, most of the people in our neighborhood don't, or didn't until I moved in, and our house is, like, Halloween central, so I think our neighbors have kind of decided that it's okay now, because we started doing it.
To lean into the Halloween. Did they at least do, like, autumnal adjacent, like, little scarecrows and bales of hay and gourds?
Yeah, you get your harvest decorations here and there. You get some pumpkins and some bales of hay and your fall colored, you know, wreaths and stuff. So they at least lead into it a little bit. But, you know, spooky season starts September 1st for us. So what can I tell you?
Excellent. So you're telling me that your Halloween decorations are up longer than your Christmas decorations.
I kind of hate to admit it, but yeah. And like, well, I've had to. It's been a push and pull with Nikki in the house where, you know, how long will I let her keep the Halloween decorations up before they come down and Christmas goes up?
Oh.
And we've kind of settled on like second week of November.
I was about to say November 10th is about as late as you can push it, I feel.
Yeah. And it kind of tracks because like January 10th is right about when I get tired of Christmas decorations, you know?
Yeah. You get a little extra wiggle room with the Christmas decorations because you have New Year's, you know.
That's true.
The holotide season. Although I realize I probably can't stem the tide of cheesy Halloween decorations for too much longer with a 3-year-old, soon to be 4-year-old in the house. We do have a plastic ghost that has lights inside of it that I forgot to put up last year, but she was enamored with, so we'll see.
I'm glad you're trying to, like, not scare her with any of it and just, like, kind of letting her enjoy it as she sees fit.
Oh, no, yeah, we don't do the scary stuff.
Nikki bought at, I think she bought it at the dollar store, actually. It was just like this little plastic, it's like three little ghosts kind of stacked on top of each other, and it's like a motion-activated, you know, thing. Uh-huh. And it's just, it's a very cute little thing, whatever, 6 inches tall. But then you turn it on, and, like, the loudest, most aggressive, like, comes out of it.
Oh, gosh.
It is very disarming.
Love it.
Best dollar we ever spent. Oh, man. Well, let's dive in straight into tonight's subject, shall
can
we?
Can check first. What are you working with there?
Well, let's see here. If you got it, you know, crack one open.
Yes.
I do not have a can. I've got a bottle of our local favorite Red Oak Bavarian Amber Lager.
Oh. Did you ever visit that brewery?
Yeah, it's a pretty cool little place.
I've never been on a brewery tour, ever, believe it or not.
Never been on a tour at that brewery, but they do have like a giant sort of Bavarian-style beer hall, and it's a lot of fun to just hang out in.
Neat.
Yeah. They do food trucks and stuff on the weekend, so yeah. It's the only problem is it's like out on the side of the highway in like, you know, 20-30 miles away, so it's you've got to really commit to want to going there.
Right. Yes.
But it's a good time.
Cool.
Bradford, what about you?
I have a Solace Brewing Super Dope IPA, also local from Sterling, Virginia. It is brewed with Amarillo, Centennial, and Columbus hops.
Ooh, that sounds lovely.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's extremely drinkable.
Mm-hmm. That's what you want out of your beer, for sure.
Drinkability.
It rates high on the drinkability scale.
Yes. And it leads us in. I don't know how it leads us in, but it's leading us into our movie for tonight, which is called A Doggone Christmas. From 2016.
2016's A Doggone Christmas. Not to be confused with 2017's Santa Stole Our Dog, A Merry Doggone Christmas.
Which we did watch in this show.
Yeah,
go check it out.
It's a
fun episode. Maybe not the funnest viewing experience, but hey, seldom is during the dog days of summer.
That's true.
Have we ever watched a good movie during the dog days of summer, actually?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't know that I have the answer off the top of my head, but I'm going to say the answer is no.
Yeah, the intersection of canine cinema and Christmas cinema is pretty dire. What do we have? We had Santa Stole Our Dog.
Right. We had
Bone Alone.
Bone right? Alone. We had the Santa Buddies.
Oh, all the Buddies films.
All the Buddies. There was
we need a new Buddy. We're long overdue for a new Buddies film.
We are. It's kind of sad. There was the one what was it? The hell. Oh yeah. Oh god.
What?
There was the one 12 Christmas Wishes for My Dog.
Oh, which, God, that one.
Which we thought was going to be a dog movie, and it turned out to very much not be a dog movie.
It was a bad movie, though. That was probably
Bad time.
Anyways.
This one, though.
We'll get into it.
Entertaining kind of in spite of itself, kind of knowingly, sort of winkingly into it.
It knew how dumb it was, and
Yeah,
it did it the right way when it knows how dumb it is, I think. Like, obviously this is a children's movie, right?
Oh, sure.
Just like all the Buddies films, but like, they had fun with it at least, I guess, maybe. Like, I'm not saying it's the best thing in the world, but it was better than I expected. Let's put it that way. Because my expectations were so, so low.
I think the best way to approach it is the people making this knew what they were making and knew who they were making it for, so they just decided to run with it and have fun.
They knew that they were not making high art here, so we're just going to have fun with it.
Mm-hmm. Now, and I know we've talked about this gentleman before, kind of teasing the episode, you know, a while back. But this was directed by a guy named Jim Wynorski, who, if you're familiar with him at all, it's because of some of his 80s movies, namely a little film called Chopping Mall, which I actually quite enjoy a lot. It's the movie about killer robots in a shopping mall.
Excellent.
Also, Deathstalker 2 was one of his. We also got, I'm not gonna belabor the point very long here, Return of Swamp Thing, Munchie, all kinds of weird 80s horror. And then, of course, he gets into the Skinamax, you know, porno parody kind of movies. And then the killer animal sort of movies. So kind of comes full circle here with A Dog on Christmas.
You know, I've been thinking about it, and there's actually a lot of overlap between, like, schlocky horror cinema and not particularly high-end children's cinema.
Yeah.
You know, they're both quite juvenile and have low production values and aren't meant to be taken very seriously. And you see this pipeline, you know, I don't think this is our first movie where it's a children's movie directed by a former horror movie or, like, schlock director. Am I wrong?
I can't imagine you're wrong.
Because we had the Wrestling Christmas Miracle.
Oh, that's right.
Weren't there a bunch of, like, really bad, kind of chuddy horror movies that guy did before this?
Yeah, they were. Those were more along the lines of, like, action thrillers. But, yeah, it's kind of the same idea.
Yeah.
Same idea, for sure. Oh, man.
Even children can't escape having bad Redboxable movies in their lives.
Listen, everybody deserves a little trash now and then. As a treat.
As a treat. Yeah, this movie. This movie's about a dog. His name is Specimen 700. He's known as Murphy, which is interesting because they go to great lengths at the very beginning of the movie to say that he doesn't have a name.
Right.
And yet he has a tag that indicates that he's Murphy. So, who knows?
But anyway, signs a name, yeah.
Or Murph. Murph, if you're sassy.
And also, at the beginning, the dog is credited as just Jesse the Jack, as in Jack Russell Terrier.
Yes. This is a Jack Russell Terrier movie.
This dog is apparently YouTube famous for doing all kinds of, like, tricks and stuff, right?
I guess that's what all the stuff at the end is.
Yeah, like his clip reel. And that's what this film is this movie is like an acting reel for this dog, basically. Which I find odd because all of the tricks that you see in the reel at the end of the film, he doesn't really do any tricks in the movie.
Other than the setting up the trap, I guess, is kind of a trick. Kind of?
Sort of.
And he, like, gets a blanket, and he lays down on it. I guess that's kind of a trick.
it's more just like, oh, this dog can be trained to do rudimentary tasks.
I mean, most of the movie, he is just moving from point A to point B and behaving around children. Which,
right.
I mean, for a dog, being on a movie set and being around a bunch of people and not doing dog stuff and staying still and quote-unquote acting, I mean, that's already pretty impressive if you know what dogs are like.
Right. So any kind of trained dog will excel if you motivate them properly. And you can see the motivation. There's a couple of shots where you can tell there's, like, a piece of a tree
dangled just out of frame.
Out of frame.
Yeah.
Because he's like, laser focused on it. And you can see, like, the kids are talking to this dog because guess what? The dog talks in the movie. But when the dog is talking to the kids, he's, like, staring off into the distance because his trainer is clearly holding a treat just off camera.
Yes. Yeah.
Which, you know, do what you gotta do, really.
Do what you gotta do. Well, this led me to look up, and apparently there are talent agencies strictly for animals. Did you know this?
I don't think I strictly knew that it existed, but I kind of guessed that it might have.
Yeah, there's more than one, because I was looking at all the things involved, because I was thinking about signing our dog up for modeling, and then looked at the article and decided that's too much work.
Well, really, tell me, what is involved in, like, animal modeling?
I mean, you gotta get headshots. I mean, it's just like almost just like human modeling, and it's just as much of a numbers game. Well, the big thing is you have to be near, it's advantageous to be either near New York or L.A., which we're not.
No.
But you gotta get headshots done, and then it's, you know, it's all about promote, and trying out for things and auditioning and, you know, training them to be cool in situations. And it's just
fair,
like,
yeah.
Eh.
And of course, not only do you have to deal with the other trained animals, but you have to deal with the trained animal owners.
Yes.
Which I imagine is even more of a chore.
And it's cool if your dog makes $35 an hour, but at the end of the day, I think I'm happy with just having my little guy hang out and lick his crotch, you know?
Right. You know your dog is a good boy, as it were. Why does the world need to know?
I mean, if the world deserves to know one thing, it's how good of a boy Charles is, and everybody fawns over him. I feel like I might have something here. But
Charles is a very good dog. Let's be honest.
He is a good boy, and the whole of humanity is his fan club when he goes outside.
Oh yes,
man. Now I'm starting to reconsider again. Maybe we got something here.
See, now we're just fawning over Charles.
I'm gonna give you a picture of Charles you can put in the show notes, because everybody deserves to know how good of a boy Charles is.
We'll put it on the Christmas Creeps Twitter or wherever we go.
Or the Blue Sky. I guess are we still doing Twitter? Or are we more
I'm still doing
over
it
Blue
for
Sky?
Promotional purposes. But yeah, I'm the conversations I have, they're on Blue Sky.
Put them on both.
Why not?
Yes, why not? The world deserves to know how cute Charles is. And who knows, if he ends up making it big, maybe it'll go into his eventual cloning fund.
Right. Oh boy. So A Doggone Christmas begins with an escape scene on a train.
Why the FBI is transporting a dog on a train when it's critical to national security is anybody's guess.
You could just put him in an unmarked van and send him where he's got to go. He's a tiny little dog.
He's a little boy. You could have an agent have him on a plane, a commercial plane. It would be fine because they're on a commercial train,
right?
But if that were to be the case, this movie wouldn't happen. And dang it, they already had the three abandoned train cars that they were filming this in, so it's on a train,
right? And right away, I noticed that, like, the first scene takes place in the club car on the train. And right away, I noticed that this club car only has one way in and one way out. Because that's the way they built the set.
Well, I think it's a... I don't think it's a set. I think it's a real club car. It might just be the end car.
It could be. I mean, who knows? But it seemed odd to me that, like, you know, typically you see a train car, you kind of pass through it on your way to other train cars.
Yeah.
This
did
not
you know,
so much.
Did you know that when in the U.S., when they did away with cabooses, the rail companies were basically just giving away cabooses, which is why you see cabooses all over the dang place, like in parks and at, you know, private schools and daycare centers and small train museums?
You know, growing up, I always did kind of wonder why every town my family went to had a caboose just kind of sitting there for kids to play with.
I did not know the answer until 2 days ago.
Wow.
And they were like, if you can get rid, if you can haul it away, it is yours.
Yeah, because like the town I used to live in had one down in the city park. The town that my grandparents used to live in had one at their city park. The town I used to work in had one at the city park. Like, they're just everywhere. You're right.
I don't know if it's an East Coast thing. I've definitely seen them in the out West. But for those of you international listeners, one fun fact a lot of people don't know about the U.S. filthy with old cabooses. You heard it here first.
Oh man.
So yeah, there's a bar car. We're introduced to one of our main characters. He's an FBI agent. His name is
Agent Shepard.
Agent Shepard?
Isn't that him?
I guess. Oh, that's right. Yes.
Get it? Because he's got to handle an animal.
Because it's a dog. It's the same joke that Pikmin 4 made. Because Pikmin 4 has a dog in it. And the commander is named Commander Shepard. I guess it's also kind of a what?
A Mass Effect joke?
It's a little bit of a Mass Effect joke as well, I guess.
You know, I wondered how you were going to work video game chat into this episode, so bravo.
And I did it. Welcome to video game chat, everybody.
So how is that Pikmin 4?
Oh, it's so good. I mean, I am a big fan of Pikmin. Always have been since the first one. It's very maximalist compared to the other Pikmin games. Except it's more... Have you ever played any of the Pikmin games?
I played the first one, and the design of it, I thought, was charming, but the style of gameplay is just not for me.
Okay, so...
Kind of the RTS sort of stuff.
Yeah.
That's which is odd, because I love Age of Empires and stuff like that, but I just couldn't get my head around Pikmin.
It's kind of an odd duck. 1 and 3 have a design ethos that you're working against sort of a time limit. 1 more so than 3, because unless you're, like, 5 years old, the time limit in 3 is kind of a joke.
Right.
Still a great game, though. Whereas 2 is there's no time limit, but you're diving down into like caves, and it's more of almost a roguelike.
Mm-hmm.
And then 4 is more in the vein of 2 in that there's no hard time limit, and it's there's just a lot of everything. The end game is probably the post game is probably bigger than the main game itself, the main story itself.
Mm-hmm.
All this to say, I really like it. I hope they release some DLC for it, because I really like... They've leaned into sort of the min-maxing aspect of it, the time management aspect of it.
Right.
So there's no time limit, but there are these things called Dandori challenges. Dandori being the term Miyamoto coined for, like, the... It's basically just time management, but for Pikmin. Like,
right,
don't
waste
any time. Don't leave any Pikmin idle. Make sure you always are thinking, like, 2 steps ahead about what you need to be doing and how you should do it and, like, what order you should do it in. And so there are these really interesting, like, time management challenges where there are some where it's, like, I don't know how I'm supposed to get, like, the highest score on them. And That's appealing to my brain. I understand that's not probably appealing to most people. Anyways,
yeah.
All this to say, I'm really enjoying it a lot. I'm almost done with it, except for doing the Sage Leaf challenges, or except for platinuming the Sage Leaf challenges, because I am but one man and my time on this earth is limited, and I don't know how anybody could, in their right mind, conceivably do it outside of like a tool-assisted speedrun, because it's insane.
Your time on this earth is limited, and right now I'm asking you to talk about a talking dog movie.
That's true, but I did want to do a sidebar for video game chat. I'm enjoying Pikmin 4 a lot. If you've ever been interested in a Pikmin game, it's very much the Breath of the Wild of Pikmin, in so much that it's very expansive and very like a good entry point. You know, it casts a broad net.
So I'm gonna wait 7 years and then play it when right before Pikmin 5 comes out.
Yeah, you could be justified in doing that. I feel like I don't know if it's gonna go on sale. Nintendo games never go on sale, but
that's exactly what happened with me in Breath of the Wild. That's all I'm saying.
How's Tears of the Kingdom treating you? I think I asked you this last week on the podcast.
Right. on the podcast that came out today, you asked me, like, yeah, it's going pretty good. I'm enjoying it. I'm dragging my feet doing any of the main mission stuff, because I'm just trying to like explore again.
Oh, you know? I'm the same way. I'm only like halfway through the story. I think it's what I'm gonna go back to after I finish Pikmin. I want to finish it, but
yeah.
I've only finished like 2 of the main 4 things. I'll leave it at that. I think you probably are far enough in the game that you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah, like the 4 primary sort of like side quests
areas. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Like, I've only finished half of them, so.
I haven't even started on those yet.
Video game chat, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for, thanks for bearing with us.
Coming to our TED Talk. We're talking about the talking dog on the train.
Yes, we haven't even gotten off the train yet.
We haven't gotten off the train. The train, which, like, two mainstream blockbusters this year both end and begin on a train. So this is, like, familiar territory to me.
Okay.
Indiana Jones, Mission Impossible 7, all about trains.
So we have Agent Shepard, and he's with two other agents.
Whose names are not important.
Whose names are not important to the plot whatsoever. They are with him for half of the movie? A little over half of the movie?
Yeah.
They just kind of disappear about two-thirds of the way through the movie, and it's not remarkable. You don't need to worry about it.
No, all you need to know is the feds have this special dog on the train, and we're not entirely sure why yet.
And they're all wearing their FBI badges, which I don't think is how it's supposed to work, but who knows?
Especially when, like, somebody on the train, like, points at one of them and goes, hey, look, MIBs. And, like, they have their badges, like, straight up, you know, on Front Street. Like,
no. Yeah. Don't think it works that way. And then there's I assume what is supposed to be an FBI veterinarian who's in, like, a lab car with awful CGI'd screens that don't indicate anything whatsoever.
No, not a bit.
And then we get an exposition dump that this creature, this dog, is a government asset because he has special abilities, which we don't know what they are yet. And it's very important that they get him to somewhere, a military base somewhere, because the DOD is going to take over handling this dog. Which, when we get into the plot later, doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but I feel silly for poking holes in a children's movie, so let's move on.
There's a point that's coming later on when I realized what this movie was, and as soon as I realized it, it made complete sense, the whole FBI angle. But we're not there yet.
But the train lurches, and the dog, the cage the dog is in, falls to the floor. The soft-sided carrier the dog is in falls to the floor and becomes unzipped. The dog escapes.
Right. Before the dog heroically jumps off the train, apparently he has spoken to a little girl. The little girl says, "Mama, he spoke to me. The dog spoke to me." Oh, this is a talking dog.
This is a talking dog movie.
But we don't hear the dog speak yet, do we?
No, we do not hear the dog speak.
Something is odd here. But over the opening credits, we get the dog running through the fields away from the train, and you get this animated sort of title card, which is kind of cute. Like, I kind of enjoyed it.
Somebody had fun with it.
Appreciated the effort. Cuts to a bunch of kids playing baseball in an empty lot in the woods somewhere.
As kids are wont to do.
I love playing baseball in the woods. It's a much more difficult challenge. but the main kid, his name is Jamie, hits a baseball into the window of Old Man Kluger's house,
which is ostensibly an abandoned house by all appearances.
An abandoned house out in the woods. So all the kids kind of dare each other to go into the house. Like, they don't, some of them think it's haunted, some of them don't think it's haunted, some of them think he's still alive in there. We don't know. But the main kid, Jamie, and his younger brother, Hugo, decide they're going to go into the house. And as they approach the house, Jamie hears a voice, and it's telling him to go around to the side of the house to open the door. Can't see, who's in the house. They go in there, and they find the dog, and he can talk.
After, like, a weird taxidermied animal jump scare.
Yeah.
Because apparently Old Man Kluger was a taxidermist.
Sure.
So,
why not?
They also find, like, cartoon eyeballs.
You better not touch those. You don't know where those have been. But they find the dog, and he can talk, and he introduces himself as Subject 700, but you can call me Murphy.
There you go.
And the boys decide to hide Murphy in their treehouse. And they're going to ask their parents if they can keep the dog. As tactfully as two children can possibly be. Then we meet the dad, who is having a tough time. He just lost his job as a toy maker right around Christmas time.
Yeah, he's a toy designer, regular Stew Pickles over here.
And he's doing the family budget, and apparently he needs two calculators to do it.
I mean, I guess I can see if you're not using a computer, I can see how having two calculators might be kind of handy.
Maybe I shouldn't.
This was filmed in 2016, though. This man should probably have a smartphone
at the very least.
But you know what? This is what the set designer and prop team decided to put on the table. So dang it, we're gonna roll with it.
Look, two calculators is shorthand for something's wrong.
Right.
But dad says, you know, maybe we're not going to have enough money to give the boys a good Christmas. And that's very tragic. So that's kind of the B story going on. Maybe C story, because it barely even gets resolved.
I thought this was going to go in a whole different direction. I'm kind of glad it didn't. It just kind of resolves itself, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, you thought the dog was going to, like, help the dad save Christmas or something?
I thought Santa Claus was going to get involved somehow, and he's going to, like, be hired by Santa Claus. This went in a very different direction, and honestly, I appreciate it, because I was expecting this to get very... I thought Santa Claus was going to get involved, and I thought it was going to get very, very children's movie-y. You know?
You would have been forgiven for thinking that, though, because like, I kind of had that thought, too.
With the level of presentation that was going on with this movie up to this point, you can forgive me for thinking that the laid-off toy designer is probably going to save Christmas somehow by making toys for Santa.
That's entirely reasonable, Brad.
I've watched far too many Christmas movies at this point. My expectations are so low.
If we take this to Sam's workshop at the... Well, no, because you already said that was, like, just not... That's what you didn't want to see.
I didn't want to see that, and I appreciated the movie for doing the bare minimum of not making that the reality.
Fair enough. So,
By the way, it's around Christmas time, and guess what? That's about as Christmassy as this movie gets.
Right. You get the very end of the movie, and it's Christmas Day, and you're like, oh, right, this was a Christmas movie.
Yeah, there's Christmas decorations in the house, and there's some Christmas music, I guess, kind of.
Yeah, they play some, like, Christmas carols over the score here and there, so just to remind you that this is a Christmas movie.
But other than that, not a whole lot.
No, sir.
Okay, anyways, back to the plot.
Oh, God. Okay, but the FBI director is on the case now. And he tells Shepard that he's called in Agent Sharp to handle this situation, which is apparently a bad thing, because Agent Sharp is apparently a person who gets things done.
They're a loose cannon. The commanding officer or whatever, the head FBI guy is super mean, because I guess it's a kid's movie.
Yeah.
And they gotta be that way.
Next day, yeah. the kids try their hand at convincing mom and dad to get a dog. And it does not go well because, I mean, dad pretty much lays it out for him. Like, we can't even afford to feed ourselves.
How are we? Even though they're having lamb stew. Lamb's expensive.
Yeah, really. Well, did you notice they apparently live on a farm?
They live like either adjacent to a farm or on a farm. But
like their house is a gigantic ranch house next to a farm.
We got to talk about, like, the weird Airbnb rental property that, or, like, the production that the kids live on this property, and there's a tree house that's super fancy, and then there's, like, a wishing well that has, like, crystals around it.
Yeah.
And like, there's the oddest framing device at the beginning and end of this movie where there's just, like, this house that says Once Upon a Time and has, like, bears dancing on it.
Yeah.
And stained glass windows, and it zooms into, like, the window of the house to start the story, and that's the framing device. Obviously, they had, like, some sort of unique property where some eccentric person made all of these buildings, you know, the fairy gardens and...
Right, and the treehouse is decorated like that, too.
Yeah, it's very, like... It's very... What's the best word I could say? It's very elfin, in a way.
That's
it's
a good way to put it.
It's very high fantasy, let's put it that way.
It's high fantasy. And I think that's also why they write around that idea by having Dad be a laid-off toy designer. Because, oh, okay, Dad made this for his kids.
I guess. Okay. But it's very clear they're, like, working with this very unique rental property. It's a cool house.
It's
got, like, these big, like, arched... It's almost like a... it's almost like an Adobe ranch kind of house.
Yeah.
All single level, but with these, like, big arches and, like, arched doors. Way cool house.
And you don't notice it from, like, the shots inside the house, but then outside the house, you look at it and go, that is way too much for house for four people.
Yeah.
So that's where that's coming from.
Where were we?
But the kids take, you know, this dinner scraps and they go out to feed Murphy. And where they discover, or they, I guess, realize that he's not a talking dog, he's a thinking dog.
He's a telepathic dog.
Yeah, because at first only Jamie can hear them, but eventually he allows Hugo to hear him too, because he thinks that Hugo might be freaked out a little bit by this dog talking to him.
Which is very considerate of a dog.
Fair. But they feed him mashed potatoes and Brussels sprouts. And guess what, folks? This is where we get the one and only dog fart in the entire movie.
It's a dog fart in the style of Greek tragedy. It is an implied dog fart that is talked about but never shown on screen.
Truly a first for Christmas Creeps dog fart canon.
He talks about how the Brussels sprouts give him gas.
Right.
Anyhow.
It's here where I first noticed, like, in the wide shots of the dog talking to the two kids. The two kids are on either side of him, and the dog is staring straight ahead.
It's like, very wishbone-esque.
It is. It's like he's laser-focused on something just off a camera. He is not looking at these two kids at all.
Although I felt like the dog in Wishbone was much more animated than this dog.
I agree. I think that, you were never going to have another Wishbone. Let's just be real about it.
A legend. Goat.
Pour one out for a real one.
Pour one out for a
but
real
it's,
one.
It's not long now before all the kids can hear the talking dog, which is good because that would have really hampered the movie's ability to tell the story.
Really would have complicated things.
Right.
Yeah, it's the next morning and the whole gang is there and they can all hear the talking dog. And decide, well, the dog gets down to brass tacks and he says, we need to get this collar off of me because there's a tracking device in it.
Right.
And at this point, Agent Sharp has shown up from Washington, D.C. because that's where, of course, that's where all FBI agents live, is in Washington, D.C. They certainly don't have field offices anywhere else.
No. Why would they? That's impractical and silly.
She shows up on a chopper from Washington, D.C. and lands and takes over command of the operation. And by the way, Agent Shepard at this point has started to show some sympathy towards Murphy. Because he's visited all these animal shelters and sees all these dogs and realizes that Murphy is just going to be locked in a cage for the best of the, you know, the remainder of his life and being tested on. And in a best case scenario will be made into, like, they say they want to make him into a spy.
Yeah.
The CIA wants to make him into a spy. There's three different departments vying for this dog. Somebody doesn't have a very clear understanding of anyways.
Well, and it's not that far-fetched of an idea, pun intended, because have you ever seen the movie called Day of the Dolphin? Or have you ever heard of Day of the Dolphin?
I've heard about the CIA trying to use dolphins as spy units. Is that it? Is that the thing?
Yeah, it's basically about... I don't remember if it was the CIA or who, but it was about them training dolphins to... not only understand English, but also to basically assassinate the president.
Yeah.
It's definitely a mood. And so, if anything, I can say that, you know, Doggone Christmas is in good company because you've got animal secret agents like in the mix here. I don't know. That's all, right. All I'm saying is, like, you know, this idea did not come out of nowhere.
Day of the Dolphin was actually inspired by like a real dude. Do you know this?
Somewhat.
There was a guy named John C. Lilly.
Okay, I know that name. Yeah, yeah.
Who had a dolphinarium in St. Thomas in the U.S. Virgin Islands. And he was, like, into isolation tanks and LSD and stuff like that. And his whole thing was, like, trying to communicate with dolphins and teach them how to, you know, talk with humans and communicate with humans and stimulate their consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
It got pretty wild. To recommend another podcast, there's a really great... Have you ever heard of the podcast The Dollop?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's a really great dollop on him. I would highly recommend looking it up. Things get pretty weird.
I can imagine. I mean, yeah.
Let's just say that.
I can imagine.
Also, apparently, he inspired Echo the Dolphin. There you go.
Okay. Another video game I just could not finish for the life of me.
I think I played 5 minutes of it as a six-year-old and could not grok it and put it down forever. Have never touched it ever again.
I think yours and mine are the common experience of Echo the Dolphin.
It's one of those series that I hold no candle for and am not even interested in. Just like Oddworld. Just like a blank slate. Know nothing about it. Don't really care to know anything about
it. Yeah, like I got mad respect for it. Not really into it.
Yeah, I mean, you know? I can see... Echo had, like... I'm sure the vibes were very good. I've listened to the soundtrack. It's about as far as I go.
Yeah, me too. Anyway, so Agent Sharp arrives on the scene.
And...
with her secret... First of all, before even talking about her secret weapon, Agent Sharp... is a character that should not exist in a children's movie, I feel.
Because of the cat suit?
Basically because of the cat suit, yeah. Because she's basically like the sexy femme fatale, or would be in any other movie.
There's a lot of cleavage going on for a kid's movie. Let's just put it that way. And she... You know what?
Yeah.
It's 2023. I guess this came out in 2016.
Still,
I'm not trying to yuck anybody's yum, but it's a kid's movie. Come on. She can wear a suit. It's fine. She doesn't need to wear a leather bodysuit in a children's movie. I'm not trying to be all protect the children here, but it's okay.
And, you know, like, I get why it exists, because, like, that's the kind of stuff that this guy used to make.
It's... And yeah, he used to make Skinamax movies, and it's his dumb shorthand, but it's like,
sneaking
girls
it into
watching
a...
this too, you know, you can make her like a professional lady in a suit, and she doesn't have to wear a skin-tight bodysuit that shows tons of cleavage.
Right.
It's a choice. It's certainly a choice.
But then the other choice is to make her like the most like stone-cold killer of them all, so everybody is afraid of her.
She's Molotov Cocktease from the Venture Brothers, essentially.
Oh, yeah. Like, everybody's afraid of her, and everybody gets out of her way because, like, she is 1,000% no-nonsense.
All business. She pulls out a drone, and it's got a stun gun. It can apparently shoot out stun gun lasers, and she's laughing while using it on the children as she chases after the children and the dog.
It's kind of great, actually.
I mean, it's certainly a choice.
Before this like hilarious chase scene happens, we have to sit down and like we get Murphy's backstory, which I did not expect. Because Murphy
and thankfully you got to add it to a very small but prestigious lot of in your letterboxed.
Yes, because Murphy's backstory. So real quick. As I understand it, he's a dog, you know, in the woods in the middle of the night, happens across a squad of soldiers doing some kind of like nighttime maneuvers and telepathically warns them that the bridge they're about to go across is out. So, of course, they scoop him up and send him in for experiments. And he comes out of this flashback, and that's when Agent Sharp's drone attacks them. Like, there's zero time for reflection here. But so, this, but hang on, yeah. Brad, I'm sorry.
No, go.
But Murphy's flashback makes this only the third film I have on a Letterboxd list called Movies in Which a Dog Has a Flashback. And the prestigious list is, it joins the ranks of Love the Coopers and The Hills Have Eyes Part 2. What I'm saying is it's the greatest movie ever made.
It reminds me of that Letterboxd with, what is, the category is movies with talking bears, and it has, like, Yogi Bear, Paddington, Paddington 2, and Annihilation.
One of these things is not like the others, and it's Yogi Bear. It's the only one where the talking bear is voiced by Dan Aykroyd. But yeah, this chase scene between Agent Sharp's taser and the kids happens, and the kids are able to outrun it briefly
because Agent Shepard like pulls the plug, because of course this thing isn't battery powered, on like her fancy laptop,
right,
that she's using to control the drone.
Yeah.
And then she gets it back online and keeps chasing the kids. But anyways, yeah, she's giving them a run for their money.
Mm-hmm. Until Chekhov's baseball enters the mix. Because when we first introduced to the kids, they're playing baseball, and Jamie cannot hit this other kid's fastball until he can. And so they do this again so that Jamie can hit the fastball and knock the drone out of the sky and destroy it.
With, like, the most stock explosion effect you've ever seen in your entire life. It's great.
It's like, it's just, you know, a GeoCities GIF of, like, an explosion.
It's great. I love it. I love it so much. It's like any computer game made before the year 2000's explosion. Absolutely. Asset. It's wonderful.
I want to briefly mention that the kids are talking about something, and then Murphy screams out, not to change the subject, and then he does the Pee-wee Herman laugh.
I noticed that too.
And I just have to say, rest in peace, Paul Rubens. If you want to hear me talk more about Paul Rubens, I just recorded an entire OST party about the music of Pee-wee Herman. So
really pour one out for a real one.
Oh yeah. I mean, we'll put that episode in the show notes, cause it'll be out by the time this one airs. So I kind of want to watch
Pee-wee's Big Adventure after this.
Oh, it's so good.
I've been meaning to. I was trying to sell my wife on it, and she was not having it.
It's, you know, it's not for everyone, and I get that. Not.
Yeah. Anyhow.
But Agent Sharp then visits the kids' school because they get an ID on Hugo. And they know where Hugo is supposed to be because Hugo is supposed to be playing one of the...
He's supposed to be a sugar plum in the Nutcracker play.
In the Nutcracker play, yeah, yeah.
He's the main sugar plum. And I must say, the principal is probably one of the funnier characters in this movie.
Oh, he's a delight. Because the principal, the whole scene is just a goof on Clint Eastwood. That's all it is.
He's just dead serious about everything. It's so good.
And he's telling him that, you know, of course, Hugo is the main sugar plum in the Nutcracker. Have you seen the Nutcracker? And Shepard says, no, I can't say I have. And school principal Clint Eastwood says, well, you should. It's a heck of a ballet. And then it just, this is a nice button on that scene. After they leave, he calls up, he tells his secretary to call up San Francisco and get his brother Harry on the line. Get it? Well, because his name is school principal Callahan, and Harry Callahan is Dirty Harry.
Yeah,
it's good. It's good stuff. It's for nobody but like adults. You and me. It's great.
dumb old nerds.
So then Shepard and Sharp conduct a steakhouse on the kid. Conduct a steakhouse.
A steakhouse. A stakeout on the kid's house because they suspect that they are the ones who are harboring Murphy.
Right.
And why was that again? Because they saw them in the drone footage. That's right.
They saw them in the drone, so they think, and they know Hugo wasn't at school when he was supposed to, so Hugo must know something.
Yes.
And Hugo, by the way, of all the kids in this movie, Hugo might be the best one as far as like the kid actors go.
Because he's the littlest and he is doing the little kid thing of like super overacting. But when little kids do it, it's cute and funny.
And when kids, if you're just, you know, 10 years old or a little bit older, it's not funny anymore.
It doesn't work, but he's like six. And he's like still a little cherub faced. And he's like, he's hamming it up. And you know what? It works.
Just ain't I a little stinker? I'm like, yeah, you sure are, kid.
Yeah, you sure are. They go, I should mention before they do the stakeout, they go into the house of the kids and they interview them. And I think you spotted this. I did not spot this, but these are the two coolest kids that have ever been in a kids movie.
That's right.
On this show, because
they're standing in the doorway of the kids' bedroom, so you can kind of see like part of the wall of their room, and just out of the corner of the frame, I caught a glimpse of very clearly the words "Space Ghost Coast to Coast." So they have a Space Ghost poster on their wall. So these are the coolest kids ever, because I didn't have a Space Ghost poster on my wall when I was a kid.
Neither did I. I didn't even have a Cartoon Planet poster.
Woulda, coulda, shoulda. But, yeah, so I'm okay with these kids, Jamie included, even though...
Kids are all right.
Kids are all right. But it's kind of at this point that I realized what movie we were actually doing here. We're doing E.T.
Oh, and they definitely do that. A little bit later, there's a very clear nod.
It's very explicit.
If you've even seen a trailer for E.T., you will notice that this is a nod to E.T.
Yeah, like, I realize, like, oh, okay, the FBI is after these kids, and the kids are hiding this creature. Oh, they're doing E.T. And then in the very next scene, all the kids are on their bikes, and the dog is in the basket with a towel over him. Like, oh, 1,000,000% it's E.T.
Okay, let's back up just a tiny skosh.
Okay.
So, what's his face? The dog is hiding out in the clubhouse, the treehouse, and he's like, I have an idea. And so he leaves the treehouse, and that's why when the FBI come to interrogate the kids and check out the treehouse, Murphy isn't there. He goes to an old cabin where they finally snipped off his collar and finds four sticks of dynamite and an activator, and sets up the dynamite sticks, wraps the wire around the dynamite sticks, and pulls the activator out into the woods.
Now, I don't really know what a Sega activator is going to do with dynamite, but I'm here for it.
You know, the big plunger thingy.
No, yeah, I know. I'm playing.
Like a prospector has. This will come into play very soon. Wait.
This movie suddenly became a John Mulaney joke.
Yes. So the stakeout is a failure. But Murphy, they leave, and then Murphy comes into the house and telepathically communicates with both of the parents and lets them in on the fact that he has a plan. The parents lead a diversion. I guess the stakeout is still happening, but apparently they're doing a very bad job of it per Murphy. So he was able to sneak in the back. Good job, FBI, if this is a dog of national importance.
Right.
Anyhow, he's able to get the parents in on the plan. They lead a diversion and lead the two agents out into the middle of nowhere with a basketball, pretending they were hiding the dog.
Right.
Whereas the kids get on their bicycles and wrap Murphy in a blanket. Do you see where we're going with this?
E.T. style, yeah.
E.T. style, and I was really... They showed some constraint not making an E.T. joke. They didn't.
And when I was watching this, you had already finished it, and in our back channel you said you wanted me to make a gif of a certain scene in the climax. I would know it when I saw it. And when I saw the E.T. bit happen, I thought... Oh no, the kids are gonna fly, aren't they?
Oh, that'd be so good. But no. The kids do not fly. They get to they are instructed by Murphy to go to the old shack. They go to the old shack. They let Murphy go, and we have a tearful goodbye. Murphy gives them a little, you know, pep talk. And then he disappears into the barn just as the agents show up after their diversion. And then Murphy runs out a hole in the back and then uses the TNT to blow up the barn. And we get a nice, and what I actually meant the gif of is the dog pushing down the plunger and then stock footage of a barn exploding.
Yes.
Because it's not the same shed if you're paying any close attention at all.
Like I actually thought it was supposed to be the Kluger house from earlier, but no.
No. It's a second decrepit shack.
Right.
Anyhow, he blows it up, and the agents and everybody else just assumes that he's dead.
And I'm suddenly reminded of a bit from Die Hard. To paraphrase Hans Gruber, when you're a cute dog, you can just disappear. But when you're a cute telepathic dog, they will find you, unless they think you're already dead.
Yeah, everybody thinks he's dead. And we cut to Christmas back at the house with the kids. And they're watching something on a laptop. Dad's trying to cheer him up. Good job, Dad. Doesn't work because the dog just died. And Agent Shepard shows up at the front. Oh, we find out that Dad gets a job.
Right.
A new job.
He had gone on an interview and it's paying off. Now he's gotten the call that he gets the job offer.
So the B plot was basically, you know, one and done.
Dad's on the job hunt. It happens. It's a thing.
Fine. Better than being Santa's apprentice or whatever.
I suppose. Whatever.
Anyhow, more Agent, realistic.
Agent
in
Shepard.
In a movie with a telepathic dog. Agent Shepard shows up.
With a Christmas gift. Because guess what, kids? Murphy's alive. Yay!
Because Murphy, I think at the very end after the barn blew up, Murphy telepathically contacted Shepard.
Sure.
I guess he figured out Shepard's on his side somehow.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that...
They don't really get into that.
They don't. They straight up do not. Like, okay, roll with it.
Anyhow.
But then the end credits play out, and we get a clip show of all of the stunts and tricks that just Jesse the Jack can do. Over, I guess it's the doggone Christmas theme song.
It's an original song that it doesn't summarize the plot except for the line "you outsmarted the FBI or whatever," which is great.
That's what I want in my Christmas songs, you know.
Yes. He's doing some tricks. He's like loading a dishwasher. He's getting shoes. He's doing dog stuff.
Riding a skateboard, walking around on his front paws, doing cute dog stuff. It's fun.
It's fine.
unfortunately, that's the last I think we will ever see of just Jesse the Jack. Only wait a minute.
Oh, but this is... Oh, what do we have here? This is actually the first entry in a trilogy?
Oh no.
It's not a trilogy. It's more than that.
Oh no, it is just a trilogy. I'm
oh, okay.
Oh no, there is a trilogy.
Oh, I thought it was, oh no, my friend, there's more than a trilogy. I was honestly surprised for a moment.
You were on board with the idea of a trilogy, but no, there is just a trilogy. Then after this, of course, we get 2017's A Doggone Hollywood. And then 2018's A Doggone Adventure. And now here's where I have to blow Bradford's mind for a second, because here's something I found out. So this film was edited and produced by a man named Tony Randall, not the brain gremlin from Gremlins 2, only that would have been amazing. A different Tony Randall. The Tony Randall who, he also directed Doggone Hollywood and Doggone Adventure. But he also directed two films that I'm sure Bradford's probably heard of before, namely a little movie called Hellraiser 2 and another movie called Fist of the North Star.
Hell yeah. Hellraiser 2, Hell on Earth?
Yeah, Hellbound, Hellraiser 2.
Oh, I don't know. What was it? Hellraiser 3 was Hell on Earth, right?
Yeah, Hellraiser 3 was Hell on Earth.
Okay.
Filmed in my hometown, by the way. Anyway,
That's why I've heard of it, because it was filmed in our hometown.
Right.
Awesome. But oh, that's amazing.
A doggone Christmas Part 3 directed from the director of Fist of the North Star. I feel like if we were smarter about our tangents, our next episode would just be about Fist of the North Star. But I don't think we can justify that one.
It's not anime anymore, so we can't. And it's not a Christmas thing. That's amazing, though.
But see, that's the beauty, because Fist of the North Star isn't even anime. It's live action.
I know. But, I mean, you know.
I know.
But, that's awesome. Thank you. That's hilarious.
I thought you'd appreciate that.
I do.
So, I mean, if enough people ask us to, maybe we'll dip back into the doggone Christmas universe. Who knows?
I would not be opposed to this, even though it's not... I mean, this one was barely a Christmas movie. Come on.
Right, yeah. Like, they only notionally gave us a little bit of Christmas there at the end. But I guess that's as good an opportunity as any to take this to the crankometer, because we are running long tonight. So the crankometer, friends, is our patented XY-axis for rating Christmas movies. The X-axis is how good we think the movie is, and the Y-axis is how Christmassy the film is. So, Bradford, the X-axis on Doggone Christmas, what do you think?
Not Christmassy in the least. Very ancillary to everything, including the plot. -2?
So we're dipping into the negatives, and I feel like it's justified because it really does kind of feel calculated.
It's tacked on.
It's
They
did it for the SEO, right?
And not even in like Anna and the Apocalypse, I feel like was an SEO motivated one, but at least they like leaned into it. Here they mention like a play and one house is decorated for Christmas and that's it.
Yeah, you get the Christmas song at the end, a couple of little Christmas tunes, really not. And then, you know, the little runner of dad not being able to pay for Christmas gifts for the kids. But that's still none of that is important to the plot of the story, which is, again, basically E.T. with a talking dog.
I could go to great lengths to talk about the inconsistencies as far as, like, the fact that all the trees, there's snow-capped mountains, but all the trees still have leaves down in the lowlands in this movie, and that it was snowing on Christmas. I'm not even, in like, I can't. Anyways.
Yeah, like, not important. As far as I'm concerned, you shoot when and where you can. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and it's a dumb kids movie. Who cares? But anyways, it's like very clearly was shoehorned in at the last minute that this was to be a Christmas movie because they needed some angle, right?
Right. And you couldn't just hinge this on this is like a star vehicle for a talented dog.
Right.
You had to put the Christmas thing in there too. Yeah, I think a -2 is adequate. It doesn't misuse it, but it is kind of craven if you think about it.
Well, it's just barely there.
Yeah.
To begin with. You could probably cut this movie in a specific way, you wouldn't even know it's a Christmas movie.
Oh yeah, like you act that song and you do a different cut out a couple of the scenes of the dad worrying about money, you're done.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, absolutely.
This is more about Agent Sharp playing with a drone and chasing a dog that talks than anything
else. And terrorizing
else.
Children.
Right. So I'm fine with that. A -2, no, not enough Christmas, and not enough of it is used properly. So that's fine with me.
Yes.
Now, the Y-axis. Did we enjoy A Doggone Christmas at all, Bradford?
I was in a... So there's so much to the Y-axis, right?
Yeah.
I was in an unusually good mood when I watched this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed this a lot more than I thought I would. I was preparing, but when you, in the dog days of summer, you go loaded for bear. You're prepared for the worst mentally. Like we had talked about before, they knew this premise was dumb. It's a dumb kids movie, and they leaned into it. I didn't hate it, and it held my attention, which is the most remarkable thing. It's still bad. Like, don't make any mistake. It's not good. You shouldn't watch it. A negative one?
Would you show it to your kids?
No, but just because there's so much better children's media out there.
And that's fair, yeah.
Maybe a negative two?
Yeah.
I can't give it lower than a negative three just for, like, they knew that it was dumb.
I am not pushing for anything lower than a negative three. Like, I did not hate this. I knew what I was getting myself into. I was not expecting it to be as light on the Christmas as it was, but the kind of the fun around the edges does not outweigh how kind of bog standard a lot of this movie is.
Yeah, I think some of it had to do with that I was in a really good mood. So,
because, like, getting back to it, this is a star vehicle for a dog that does tricks, and in the movie, the dog really doesn't do any tricks.
All right, negative two? Negative three?
I'm going to say this is a negative two because, again, I'm feeling charitable. But this is better than it could. Like, look, it's no Frozen Christmas 3. We can't stress this enough. Better than it had to be, but it's, you know, still at a certain point, you're polishing a turd.
Here's my question for you.
Okay.
Where does this fall on the spectrum of dog movies that we've watched for Dog Days of Summer? Because I think this might be one of the better ones.
This probably is one of the better ones. I'm going to give the edge to Santa Stole Our Dog just because of the sheer
ludicrousness of the whole premise.
Novelty of the premise and, like, the I kind of came to sort of respect the filmmaking of it because, like, you could tell they were really trying with basically nothing.
And it was, yeah, Santa Stole Our Dog was also, this had the so bad it's good factor going for it, but Santa Stole Our Dog's so bad it's good factor was just on, like, another level.
It really was. And,
like,
I may or may not be weighing my opinion of that because the director of that film actually contacted us after that episode.
Bless you. Thank you.
So all I'm saying is,
Best dog movie that we've watched after Santa Stole Our Dog.
You know what? We'll take that. This is, speaking of twos, this is a negative two on our crankometer, folks. There you have it. We've done our due diligence for the Dog Days of Summer, and I'm ready to jump into September with both feet, no matter what that means coming up, because we honestly have no idea. We don't have anything planned, as we said last time. We fly by the seat of our pants here.
We don't have a called shot.
Called shots do not work out for us, so we tend to stay away from them. But if and when we land on our next episode, we will let you know. So keep a weather eye on our socials. We're on Twitter and Facebook, all the socials, at Christmas Creeps. That's where you can find us. You can also email us at xmascreeps@gmail.com. Or, this is the thing we really want you to do, go to our show notes, find the link to our Discord channel, and follow us and join us on Discord, because that's where most of our conversation happens, and we talk about everything from video game news to the weird stuff that Bradford likes to make at home on the stove to just about everything, folks. It's a good time, and we want you all to come and join us. Bradford, anything that I'm missing?
No, I think that's about it. That we know you have a lot of choice when it comes to what you listen to. So thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate you.
Yeah. Thanks for taking an hour out of your busy schedule to help us keep you company, because that's what we're here for.
And if you could take another moment, please feel free to leave us a review at any podcast review type sites, or tell a friend. Word of mouth is really how we get out there. So we appreciate it. All you do.
if you enjoy the show, tell a friend. And if you don't enjoy the show, tell a friend that our podcast is called... Now I'm trying to think of a podcast I don't like.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Yeah, sure. That's all we got for tonight, folks. So I've been Joseph Wade.
I'm Bradford.
Happy Dog Days of Summer.
Good night, everybody. Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.